listening to Critical End, episode number 89.
The episode that's a clever deconstruction of previous episodes.
I always feel like I'm pausing for the music. I'm sorry. Just jump into it next time. Surprise me. Go ahead.
Well, I pause for the edit point, but then it's like...
Do you really?
Yeah. I don't know. Because I'm like, now, and then this. That's my process. Scream movies, Logan.
Yes.
Right?
What is your... Oh, what about them? What is your history with the Scream films, Ryan?
I hadn't seen them until this.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'd seen the ends of both 1 and 2. That was the only part I'd seen with the last 10 minutes of both of those movies, for some reason.
Well,
so,
I feel like
it wasn't a lot of suspense for me going back.
Right, yeah, well, this is a genre I think that you and I tend to know a lot about. Mm-hmm. I always say, like, comedies are my favorite, but I'll always watch a good horror movie whenever I get a chance.
I can't explain why I hadn't bothered to see these before.
Well, I kind of can. That's what I'm getting at here. It's a genre we kind of love for the most part. A good slasher is up there with the favorite of that genre, because,
sure.
Like, it's, you know, a ghost film, whatever, okay, a ghost is kind of torturing people, doing whatever. A torture film is kind of like, oh, you know, some Europeans now are killing some Americans. But a good slasher, it's kind of Agatha Christie in a way, or Psycho, you know, you want to know who it is, and that's the mystery of what keeps
it. It's a mystery element, sure.
So, you know, it has all that going for it. Then we have a cast of people that you and I have loved for a long time. Matthew Lord pops up, Liv Schreiber.
Sure.
I'm trying to think of others. David Arquette on my end. A few other people, Luke Wilson cameo, some great cameos there too.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the problem? Why did we never see this? Simple answer, Wes Craven. We have been burned, I think, so much in the past by Wes Craven, we just could care less, is what it was.
It's definitely true. After having seen, like, Last House on the Left and Hills Have Eyes, these originals, I definitely wasn't going to go back for Scream just for Wes Craven. But, like, there was a time when Scream was popular, and I was sort of ambivalent to Wes Craven, and that I should have jumped out to see it. But maybe it was like, I have sort of a weird aversion to popular movies. Not aversion. It's not like I'm thinking, oh, Scream's bad because it's popular. What I think is, Scream's popular, and therefore I can see it anytime. I want to go see an obscure movie.
That's, you and I, this is one of the reasons I think we're such good friends, because we feel the exact same about that. It's not like we dislike something because it's popular, mm-hmm. okay? It's just, when it's that popular, you feel like you're hearing it from so many people, you don't want to see it at that time.
Right.
But, no, it's the other thing. I think what another thing kind of confirmed is what Wes Craven in my mind is that at the time, you know, this at the big slasher reinvention of Scream happened, Kevin Williamson was in such high demand, he pumped out like 4 Kids or something, but that's incidental.
It's totally unrelated.
The Urban Legend films, I Know What You Did Last Summer films, and yeah, I saw all those. And so I think the only reason I didn't see the Scream movies really was Wes Craven.
Well, we will definitely be able to talk about why this is a... Well, at least the first one is a very positive entry in Craven's catalog because he had nothing to do with writing it.
That's a big part
of why Scream worked.
And for the most part, he's not trying to do anything special with the direction either.
Right.
But yeah, especially in the wake of My Solo Take, it really shows when he's not writing something, I think.
He's George Lucas-esque in that way.
Yeah, exactly. It really is. Anyway, okay, so what we're going to do this show then is we're going to discuss the first 3 Scream films.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm sure you're aware, Scream 4 opened this week, and our next podcast coming out Wednesday, we will tackle that. And after discussing, we haven't seen this yet, okay? We haven't seen Scream 4 yet,
no.
Okay, Ryan? Have you seen Scream 4 yet, Ryan? Did you cheat?
No, I haven't.
Are you in the theater right now?
Shut up, Logan.
This is the best part of Scream 4.
Shut up, Logan. Courtney Arquette's joke. Go on.
You're just watching Hop, aren't you?
Yeah, a little.
Yeah. We'll after we review the first 3, kind of give you guys what we thought about it. We'll discuss our feelings on Scream 4, what we possibly think might happen, and kind of what we'd like to happen, because it's been 10 or 11 years now, Ryan, since the Scream franchise ended.
Indeed, 11 years. And this will be exciting because I don't think we've done this on the show before, where we've made a prediction about a sequel, and then we can immediately see if we were wrong or right.
I thought that'd be kind of a cool way to do this show, because we usually do the whole series in one big chunk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be kind of nice to look ahead in a Letters to Cleo type way. We can guess about this.
I'm going
to
do it as a Tuesdays with Maury kind of way. I hope that's okay. You're going to die at the end.
You already put me to sleep.
No.
Okay, so Scream 1 then, Ryan. This is a big film, I think. I can't remember the name of the book now. I was reading a book. There's actually a special feature on the... This sounds so made up, but it's not. If you buy the new special director's cut edition of the original 80s My Bloody Valentine...
Okay, which I'm not going to do.
The guy who wrote this book got his own special feature on that DVD. It's somewhat related, mind you. And he actually puts this whole chart on there. It's like this interactive timeline of slasher films and horror movies. And you can see where they all fall. Well, basically what I'd read in this book that stood out in my mind, this is before seeing these Scream films, was that you can look at Psycho as the granddaddy of all slasher movies. Okay,
sure.
And I absolutely see that. I was agreeing with him at this point and everything. And then a few years, you know, after Psycho came out, everyone wanted to do their own slasher film, et cetera, et cetera. My favorite being William Castle. My favorite bootleg being William Castle's Maniac.
Angry guy.
Yes. The seats buzzed you too whenever the guy got really angry.
Right.
Then a few years later, along came John Carpenter and kind of reinvented it with the that's what people needed at the time. This kind of like early 70s twist with Halloween. Halloween's a film that, like, to me, Halloween and Psycho couldn't be further apart, okay? I think Psycho has all sorts of great things, especially character things and great shot stuff that are going on in that movie. I don't see any of that in Halloween. Halloween's basically just a guy running around killing people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's no mystery about who it is either. But that was considered sort of like, I guess if we, you know, we'd the granddad, and that's the father of all slasher films, right?
Yeah.
And so after that, every slasher film tried to, you know, was kind of in Halloween's shadow as far as what they were doing. It's not to say Halloween was the best of that type. But it was there to kind of overshadow all those.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Halloween.
No, neither am I. Or John Carpenter. I guess John Carpenter kind of falls in Wes Craven with me in that kind of territory. But then years later, Scream came along, and Scream is actually considered the son of all slasher films. And the way this works out is that Scream happened at a time when, by that moment, everyone, like, all the stuff had become so cliche, and everyone becomes so aware of how these films work. And Kevin Williamson was the same guy behind Dawson's Creek and now Vampire Diaries, was clever enough to write a script about that more than anything else. And went through a bunch of just some background there. Went through a bunch of different changes. Mostly the Weinstein brothers did not like it at all. They were smart enough to buy the script to think this is going to be a huge hit. But they did not like the ghost face mask to be with. They wanted that to change.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been a big mistake. They did not think the killer was scary enough. They wanted a hip young cast. More than anyone old, clogging up the joints here. If still to this day, Henry Winkler is not getting the credit he deserves for being in Scream.
He is great in Scream.
He is. No, I really like him too. Side note: he wasn't actually meant to die in the original script. Did you read about all that?
Yeah, I did. And it's the but it was totally correct to have him die. That was a great move.
And then the final thing was that Craven and Kevin Williamson both agreed on the film as long as Scary Movie was kept as the title.
Mm-hmm.
Craven tells great stories where he still has robes and all sorts of stuff that say Scary Movie from the shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very last second, it was changed. And apparently, Drew Barrymore was the one who told him. Like, she called up Wes Craven. She's like, hey, did you know they changed the title of our movie? He's like, no, I was not aware of that at all.
Well, no, Drew Barrymore, I was just not aware of that.
Super generic, because, you know, Weinstein Brothers, once again, thinking that we're kind of dumb. We're like, oh, no one's going to know it's a, you know, a scary movie. If we call it Scary Movie...
Well, I read that they wanted to... If they just called it Scary Movie, they thought that maybe people wouldn't get that there were elements of, like, I guess, comedy and mystery to it, which is kind of a weak point. Although Scary Movie does seem, and I mean, of course, I'm colored by the fact that there's been another series of movies called Scary Movie
by the same guys, in a way, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm color, but I think that Scary Movie could have perhaps gone down the wrong road of, like, it automatically sounds so ironic and self-referential that people would assume it's a straight-up comedy.
You have to remember this is before the whole fad of movies, you know.
Well, sure. But, like, if you saw, like, the trailer for Scream of, like, a really, like, a potentially scary movie, but then it's just called Scary Movie, you're thinking, this is, like, that's dumb. What a dumb title. Or at least people who are not aware of irony would.
I would have gone to the movie and remembered more of the comedy elements than the scary slasher elements.
Right, which could have been a detriment.
This is, I think, a Book of the Dead, Evil Dead type thing going on here.
No one wants to read their movie, Logan.
Exactly. And so Scream works, for what it's worth.
Right.
But I'm bringing all this up because when we discuss Scream 4 in a few minutes, Ryan, all the Weinsteins will become important again.
Okay, Weinstein.
I'm so sorry. Go back and re-edit all those I just said. Okay?
Got it.
Cool. I can't remember all these Jewish people.
I know. It's, they all look alike to me.
All the Jews look alike to me. Y'all look like John Lovitz. It's so weird.
That is John Lovitz, Logan. Stop. No. Stop playing. Stop sitting in his lap.
The yarmulke. I can't tell.
Hello.
That's a great Lovitz, by the way.
Thank you.
Oh man, John. Hey, how do I get down to 4th Street? Do you know by any chance?
I'm not doing a bit with you about John.
Okay.
I don't have John Lovitz material. I'm sorry.
Oh man. Terrible. But Lovitz does. I'll give him a call. Okay?
Yeah, if you would.
Anyway, so there's the setup. So then Scream came out, and things kind of did change. Yes, it hit the – everything's really aware in the film.
Horror films have been more self-aware ever since.
Ever since. So thoughts on Scream, Ryan? Do we need to set up for all three Scream movies to kind of – I guess so if we're going to talk about the possible storyline for the fourth film.
I'll run down the plot super quick.
Go for it.
So it starts out, as everyone knows, with Drew Barrymore in hanging out at her house, and I can go ahead and say that she gets killed in the first 10 minutes, which is basically sort of an homage, or maybe perhaps an accidental one, to Psycho, where one of the more popular actors of the film is killed right away, and then you're like, well, now anything can happen. But she's killed by this mysterious killer in a ghost face mask, who goes on to terrorize several members of this high school, of which Neve Campbell playing Sydney, as well as Skeet Ulrich and Jamie Kennedy and Matthew Lillard and Rose McGowan, and I think that's it, of all the people that matter, go to. And it sort of all centers around Sydney because several years ago, actually only like 1 or 2 years ago, I think, her mother was killed, and so she's been sort of on edge about her own safety ever since, and now it seems like this killer is targeting her and perhaps knows something about her mother's death.
This is the backstory. It seems incidental, but we know it's going to pay off in some big way.
Exactly. Also in the mix are Courtney Cox as Gail Weathers, the cruel, unscrupulous news reporter who's trying to get the big scoop, and David Arquette, who is a bumbling police deputy who's trying to protect everybody. And the whole point of it is as soon as people start dying, the characters, especially Jamie Kennedy's character, immediately associate the way actions are happening to them with that of a horror movie, and they start reacting to the situation as though they were in a movie and explaining, like, well, if this were a movie, I would never go down here. This is obviously I'm going to die. Or, you know, never say, I'll be right back, or you won't be, etc. And that's sort of what makes the movie fun, is it is a horror movie that is well aware of the tropes of a horror movie.
And this is probably why it's also a huge take, because it works on multiple levels there. You have, for the people who aren't huge movie nerds like you and me, Ryan, you have this cool, like, slasher film to watch with this great hip cast.
Mm-hmm.
And then for people like you and me, there are those kind of like inside references and homages, even more so than what they're just saying. You mentioned Jamie Kennedy is, you know, he's the character that works at the video store and knows about all these things. And he's, you know, the famous scene, of course, where he's listening to rules.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have little inside jokes, too, that are kind of funny and thrown in there as well. And so for what it's worth, I think Scream's a good film. And now, this is a film I've seen multiple times, and it's kind of had to grow on me. I know that sounds terrible. But after a while, I kind of know what to expect from the performances, and what you get is kind of fun. The opening's cool, and each Scream film after that has always tried to top the opening, which, once again, we'll talk about that in the fourth one coming up.
Yeah.
With Drew Barrymore is what I'm talking about. I always thought Neve Campbell was great as Sydney, pretty much the only Neve Campbell role I think anyone remembers outside Party of Five. Anyway.
Yes,
no,
she's good.
So, yeah, she's good. You also have Matthew Lillard turning in one of his finest performances, I think.
Matthew Lillard is a goddamn maniac in this movie.
He is so freaking good at it, though, is the thing.
He is.
You remember, like, then you're reminded of those other roles you've seen him in and the fact that you watched 2 Scooby-Doo movies just because he was so good in them.
He is really good in a very weird way.
He's one of those people, even like when he pops up, this is what everyone forgets about, when he pops up talking about himself playing Shaggy in Looney Tunes Back in Action.
Yeah.
For like 30 seconds, it's still one of the highlights. You know what I mean? Like, that is awesome right there.
Yeah.
Of those things, he just seems like such a great guy. You kind of wish he'd still play a high school kid somewhere, I guess.
He needs a resurgence, because he's been doing, like, Shaggy's voice in a couple of things, but, like, he needs to be an actor again, because he really is good. And, like, this movie proves that he can just throw himself into a role and be a goddamn crazy person, and it's really fun to watch.
I super agree. Another thing that's really helped the Scream, the first Scream film, I think, is this kind of nostalgic factor that comes with it. Like, it has enough 90-ness to it to make you kind of, like, remember it fondly in a way. And that kind of adds to the film, I think. There's there's a few cool things it does with that. I don't know. It's dated in a way that's kind of homely and fun.
It mentions it being the 90s a lot, and yeah, also mentions the millennium a lot, and it's sort of in a quaint way.
Which the best, kind of like, you know, people always think of these 80s classic teen films, but, you know, for the 90s we have Empire Records, 10 Things I Hate About You. Those are kind of memorable for being set in the 90s, I think. But yeah, the first Scream has that going for it. Great cast. The mystery element of the story is pretty upfront and interesting. And then there are a few distractions, I think, Ryan. One is that as far as it being kind of like a cool slasher films goes, it's not really that. I think it's not gory enough. It tends to rely more on the mystery and comedy at times than it should. There are times when it's not particularly clever, but that's not too noticeable in the first film so much as we'll get to in the sequels.
Yeah, I mean, they got censored a lot from what I understand in terms of taking a lot of that gore out. There's not as much gore as you would expect from a modern slasher film, which is kind of weird because I still consider Scream a modern slasher film even though it's like 20 years old now.
What's considered, like, if you don't believe this guy in his book, this is the slasher right now.
Right.
Scream, everything right now is in Scream's shadow.
Yes, it's like 14 years old, but whatever.
So yeah, it is like 14 years old, that's right. But no, I will go out on a limb here, Ryan, and I haven't looked back at my past Wes Craven ratings, but this is one of my favorite Wes Craven directed films.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This is my, I did look back, and this is my favorite Wes Craven film.
So,
which has nothing to do with him, really. I mean, no offense, but it's directed completely competently. It's fine, but the thing that I like about this movie are the performances and the script, which is not Craven.
It doesn't seem like Craven at all.
Yeah.
It seems like really they wanted a name associated with the genre to direct it, and that's about it.
But let's talk about the script really briefly, if we can, because I think that there is two sides to it. One, it's the point it's trying to make about horror movies, and while still being a clever horror movie in itself, is very well executed.
I agree.
It dissects the genre. It still is part of the genre. It reminded me of Hot Fuzz in that way, or even Shaun of the Dead, those sort of Edgar Wright movies where it's like, look, we're going to sort of lovingly make fun of a genre while still being a great entry in that genre.
I think, yeah, Hot Fuzz is a great comparison to that.
Right?
Okay, go ahead.
However, the closer you look at it, you realize there's not so much going on. Like
That's what I'm saying. This is, I think they tend to hide the weaknesses pretty well of this film, but they are there. Go ahead.
Well, Kevin Williamson himself was like, it's like a modern, in the modern slasher, you don't have to have a motive. And I'm like, well, that makes the story kind of not interesting.
Exactly.
And there does end up being a motive. I think we can say the ending of Scream, right? We're going
to
talk about
we need to talk about the sequels, right, yeah.
So the ending of Scream is that it turns out that it's, the killer is Neve Campbell's boyfriend, who was suspected early on in the movie but exonerated. And
through his death, pretty much.
Through his death, eventually, yeah.
I mean,
also
the cops went through him, too, yeah,
the
right.
fact that he was in jail during one of these moments. And with the partner of Matthew Lillard's character. So there was two of them, which was sort of the twist, so that's why they were able to be so efficient. And they kind of split the difference in a sort of an interesting way, where, because Kevin Williamson was like, well, should we have a motive or not? So Billy, who is Skeet Ulrich's character, Sidney's boyfriend, has some kind of motive. Now, it's kind of a weak one. Apparently, because her mother, Sydney's mother, slept around with Skeet Ulrich's father a long time ago, which is why his mother left. So he's upset for losing his mom, so he killed her mom, which is kind of an overreaction, but okay, he's crazy. But why does he want to then kill her years later among many other people? Like, it doesn't seem to make a ton of sense. In fact, I actually was more... For some reason, the guy with the motive was less believable than Matthew Lillard's character, who's acting like such a goddamn psychopath that when they ask him what he's doing, he's like, peer pressure. I'm like, I buy that.
Yes. Oh, man. And there's so many great moments there with him, too, where he, like, despite all this, he's still a teenager. He's like, oh, my parents are going to be so mad at me, and things like that are perfect for his character.
Yes.
I think these problems, Williamson noticed himself because it seems like he tries to fix them in his ending of the third film. By saying, like, oh, this is the person that really motivated those killings in the first movie, but it's too late in the game for that, and it's pretty stupid, too, I think.
Yeah, I am of two minds about that. We'll get to that when we get to it. But, yeah, you're right. That's definitely noticeable. But it's still enjoyable because the characters are so fun to watch, or the performances are so fun to watch. But the characters, that's kind of where I'm going with this, the characters themselves are sort of thin, and that's why you're like, well, I hope this... But here's the thing. The characters are thin, but luckily the movie, unlike most horror movies, this is like a big distinction, I think, and that's like probably one of the most important things, it moves really quick. Like,
it does.
It's just when you're like, well, here comes the second big set piece. No, actually, that was the finale, and it's over. And it's actually not, it doesn't feel like abrupt. It feels like it ended well, but it felt really short and quick, and that's what a horror movie like this should be, because it's so quick you don't realize that you didn't really care about the characters, you know?
Right. It's true. Although there are some characters you kind of fall in love with this in this movie. You realize that in the second one when some of them start dying off.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I can go with you on that.
But overall, I think Scream, the first one, is a great film that you will want to revisit after seeing a few times. And it is a 7 in my book.
It is a 7 in my book as well. I enjoyed it. I thought there were some problems. And I probably, it's one of those movies that I think I might have even rated higher had I seen it at the time, so I'm kind of upset I didn't. Because I, you know, obviously, the stuff that happens in this movie is no longer as new. Like, the characters, you know, reacting as if they are in a horror movie was very new at the time. Now it's like every horror movie, well, you have to have that moment where they're like, oh, this is like a scary movie.
Ryan, this is like 1997, so even if we wanted to, we couldn't have seen it at the time. They wouldn't let us in the theater. That's why you and I went down the street to see Vegas Vacation instead.
Well, we could have somehow seen it, but you're right.
If you're talking about paying to see Vegas Vacation, going to see Scream, you're crazy, man.
Remember when we tried to see Sixth Sense and couldn't get in?
No. Is that true? I got in. Did you wait out in the car the whole night?
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah, I know I saw Sixth Sense in theaters. I remember the theater I saw it at.
No, we did see Sixth Sense. Wait a minute, maybe... I know we saw Sixth Sense together.
Out?
You and I saw Sixth Sense together. But maybe we went to see a different movie and had to see Sixth Sense. Was Sixth Sense PG-13 or R?
It was PG-13.
Okay, so maybe we went to see some R movie and couldn't get in.
Oh, yeah, we probably wanted to see like American Psycho or something, knowing us.
Anyway, Scream is a solid film.
I agree.
And it accomplishes what it set out to do. So.
Now, watching Scream, Ryan, I can see where it could totally become a franchise, but it's not one I'd want to become a franchise. I'm not saying it's self-contained, but I like it for what it is, okay?
Right, the most interesting part of Scream is the point it makes, which you don't need a sequel to establish.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't need any more here. Well, I think a year or two later, along comes Scream 2.
Oh, less than a year.
Less than a year, okay.
They were producing it while Scream was in theaters.
With a whole new hip cast, including Jerry O'Connell, a guy from Justified.
Timothy Olyphant.
Timothy Olyphant. And a few other hip young up-and-coming
hippers.
Kids here. The hipsters.
Young hippers.
So what's going on with all these people, Ryan? What kind of plot do we have for Scream 2?
Well, it's supposed to take place 2 years later, I believe, but it was filmed only months after Scream was a huge success in theaters. It takes place at college. I don't know where this college actually is, but Neve Campbell has gone off to college, getting over the fact that...
Sydney.
Getting over everything that happened in the first film and everything with her mother. And she's there with her new med student boyfriend, Jerry O'Connell, his friend, Mickey, played by Timothy Olyphant. She has a roommate who I don't know, that actress, and a couple other people. Oh, and Jamie Kennedy's character is also there at the same college, the guy who...
Yay!
Randy, I believe. He has a crush on her still, and he's the one who explains the rules of horror movies and things like that. They're all there, and I should mention that I initially had a great reaction to Scream 2 because as I was watching it, one of the first things that happens is there's a random murder at the beginning, which you expect. Then, Neve Campbell gets a phone call in her dorm, and it's the Scream voice, and he's like, scary voice time. And she doesn't react to it at all. She's like, yeah, that's great. And she looks, and she has caller ID, which says exactly who it is. I'm like, great. That is a great way to expand upon the first movie because you're saying not only is Neve Campbell aware of Scary Movie, she's aware of the one she was just in. So, like, she knows to get caller ID and have a... Like, that's funny because it's like now we are one more level on top of the meta-ness of what we were before.
She's going to be all kick-ass now, right, Ryan?
Well, not that. I mean, a little, but mostly it's the self-referential stuff kind of falls off there, and...
I agree.
It kind of is a little bit too much of a traditional horror movie. I mean, excuse me, you get Randy telling, you know, so let me just to finish the murder start again. So David Arquette's character shows back up to save Sydney, and so does Courtney Cox as Gail Weathers to get the big scoop. Also important, we should mention in the first one, for only seen really, really quick on a news story is Liv Schreiber, who plays the guy who was wrongfully accused of murdering Sydney's mother. And I guess they probably were thinking there'd be a sequel at that point.
Williamson had figured out, he said he'd worked out a story arc for 3 films.
Yeah.
And the same thing is going to be actually, he said about Scream 4. They have a 5 and 6 plan if this one does good. Which now might not be a good thing, because I feel like they'll leave it an open-ended ending or something.
Yeah.
More on that later, of course. So we have Liv Schreiber now becoming more of a character in the second one, which I do enjoy.
He's Cotton something. Weary. And he was wrongfully accused of murdering Sydney's mother, but when we found out that it was Billy and whatever Matthew Lillard's character, he was released, and so he is. So there's a tension between he and Sidney, who was the one who accused him. But he's trying to basically get in the spotlight. Like, he was wrongfully accused for a year, and now he's trying to turn it into, like, a big TV deal, a book deal. He needs Sidney to help him so, like, they can go on, like, TV together and talk. She doesn't want anything to do with him.
Also tossed into the mix here is Laurie Metcalf. As a rival reporter to, maybe a rival, we're not quite sure. She's just kind of like the underdog reporter to Gale Weathers.
Right. Basically, they're
And
to
then,
annoy Courtney Cox.
yeah, and then we have Sarah Michelle Gellar
Yes.
as a sorority girl who seems like she should be a character because she gets her own scenes pretty much, but then she's not really a character at all.
She's the Drew Barrymore role, though. She was the, like...
Kind of, but it's kind of mixed in the middle of the movie in a weird way, I think.
It is, but, I'll allow it.
I have no complaints about that, mind you, because what's his name also from Dawson's Creek's in there, too, for a bit of a
Oh, yeah,
cameo.
he's only there for like 2 seconds. But Sarah Michelle Gellar was doing Buffy at this point, right?
Yes, oh no, she was a
Right.
star, yeah.
So,
She
like,
actually...
that serves the role of Drew Barrymore of, like, famous girl gets
Right.
killed.
She just come off of I Know What You Did Last Summer,
Oh,
yes.
yeah. Okay.
But all that's also Kevin Williamson, so there's your connection for all that. Anyway, so yeah, she's at college. The murders start happening again. What are some flaws in this movie, Ryan? Because I have somewhat of a list here.
Well, there's not enough focus on Neve Campbell's character for
This is the
me.
beginning of that, and I think the series is starting to get further and further away from her as it goes on.
Yeah, it's really kind of odd. Like, it's all supposed to be about her. It's all motivated by her. Like, the story is very specifically about her past. It's not like a Friday the 13th movie where it could be anyone. It's like very focused on her past, but she's only in every other couple of scenes.
Yeah, there's way too much of Gale and Dewey in this one.
This one, like, this one was where I started, like, realizing, like, how the first movie was fun because of its setup, not its characters. Because you spend time with Dewey and Gale, you're like, these are both boring, stupid characters. And I
Like,
just don't want to see any more scenes with them.
right, they're interesting when they're in scenes with the characters that, you know, that there's plot revolving around. But when they're just out there trying to solve the mystery, I'm kind of bored. It's because it's not what I want. I'd rather see characters like set up and dying, kind of like Sarah Michelle Gellar, I guess. I don't know. There's other things too. We have the typical college life going on with Jerry O'Connell, some backstory there, which is also not that interesting. Overall, I feel like this film is way too long. It's everything that was like really cool and fast-paced about the first film is kind of thrown out the window, and it instead concentrates more on this mystery of solving who it is. It's, oh, someone's calling me, and this time they're out here on the quad with us. Where are they? Things like that are just stretched on way too long. There's not enough action, I don't think.
Yeah.
And on top of that, all of our new characters, the people around that are suspicious because they weren't in the first one. Like that's kind of like the Matthew Lillard effect. You know what I mean? So you're more suspicious of them. Are all kind of boring, and you know pretty much it has to be one of them too. Like for instance, we have our Laurie Metcalf, and we have like our Jerry O'Connell, right? And honestly, they're not as interesting as they should be as characters, even though we were thinking at this point one of them is probably going to be the murderer.
Right, we don't really think it's going to be any of the characters that survived the first film. So even though they try to sort of make us think it is,
Yeah.
so yeah, it's sort of like, well, it's only one of these couple handful of characters. Now they do sort of play with that in an interesting way that I give them credit for, and I did enjoy, which is where she's almost immediately, like she's almost immediately suspicious of Jerry O'Connell because like it was her boyfriend last time, maybe it's her boyfriend
Yes.
this time. He tries to be supportive of it and not take it like a bad way, but. She is like, stay away from me. I don't want anything to do with you right now. And then once this whole murder thing's over, it'll be fine. Which culminates at the end of the movie, where it turns out that Mickey shows up, Timothy Oliphant's character, as one of the killers. And he's like, "Yep, good thing we planned all this together, Jerry O'Connell." He's like, "No, he's lying, Sidney. Don't believe him." And it's like, as an audience member, I'm like, "Well, obviously he is lying because this wouldn't be interesting if it was telling the truth." And
He's like, "I'm not talking to you. The person behind you is who I'm talking to."
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's really kind of how it goes down.
So Sidney has the opportunity, sort of, to maybe save Jerry O'Connell, but she can't figure out if it's true or not. Mickey ends up shooting him, and
That's cool.
she has to realize that, well, she actually, Jerry O'Connell was innocent, and she let
The
him
setup
go.
for this ending is pretty lame. Halfway through the movie, they're like, "And here's a bit of the play she's in," and it's pretty stupid too, because that's like Ghostface is in the play with her, apparently.
Yeah.
That's when I felt like some Wes Craven was sneaking into the movie, mind you.
Yeah, it gets a little bit moody and weird. I mean, that was okay. I thought that was fine, and they set it up enough where. When it came back, when he was like, some of his Greek frat brothers show up in the costumes too. Like, I'm like, all
Right.
right, you're using it enough that when it happens in the end, I'll give it to you.
I see that. I would have cut a lot of that scene, though. Anyway, the biggest problem I have here, Ryan, as far as plotting and story-wise goes, is that I guess the reveal of who the killers are, okay? One problem here is that the killer himself disappears halfway through the movie,
Yeah.
and so it becomes rather obvious that it's going to be him. And I think the reason for this is, okay, we can't play the same trick on them where we kill the killer. And because that's obviously that's kind of cheating. That goes back to Ten Little Indians and the Agatha Christie. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So we can't do that again, even though they flat out do in the third one in kind of a lame way.
Mm-hmm.
And we need someone else too along the way. So it's the only other really obvious character I felt, Laurie Metcalf's reporter character,
mm-hmm.
and it's the dumbest reveal in history because it's basically like, oh, I'm that guy's mom from the first movie, and a character really is like, oh, no, you're not. I've seen pictures, and you're not her. And then Neve Campbell's like, oh, she had surgery. See, I bet that's how she did it.
Yeah, I mean,
stupid, I think.
I liked that. I didn't, like, love it, but I thought that was kind of fun because that almost was another sort of meta twist on horror movies where it was like, remember It's the Mom, like, referencing Jason a little bit, you know?
Well, that's, okay, the fact that they're referencing the first film I think is kind of cool. But none of this really works out because here she was running around the campus the whole time, not even trying to conceal her identity at all. And no one, like, picks up on this, I guess. And Gail Weathers, who wrote the book pretty much on the Woodboro murders, does not notice this either, I guess. But I don't know. This is pretty weak, and to me this is the beginning of the downfall of the Scream series. However, I think we're in a slight disagreement here. This is the first time I realized I was falling in love, might be the wrong term here, falling in like with some of the characters.
Like?
Dewey, for instance. A big sad scene was when Jamie Carter's character died.
I did like Jamie Kennedy's character, yeah.
It's funny that they reference that in the third film as a like one-off joke about how a lot of people were upset about that. Remember?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's – but I think we needed him to die. We needed a character from the first film to die to show the seriousness
of
the second film. I think overall the film's way too long. There's a lot of pacing and plotting problems, and the end is kind of a weak payoff.
The ending was – okay to me. Like, I thought it was fine. I actually had the opposite reaction. I was like, okay, the Laurie Metcalf thing is, you know, not great, but that kind of works. Like, all right, the idea
I think she's going to be worked in somehow, yeah.
Yeah, the idea is that it was Billy from the first movie, Skeet Ulrich's mother, coming back for revenge for Neve killing Billy, who she views, like, Neve Campbell's mom as the whole problem. Anyway, this comes back to...
Laurie's mom didn't care so much.
But the thing that made less sense to me was Mickey, like Timothy Oliphant's character. I'm like, I guess he's just psycho, and he's like, he has this whole sort of very weak subplot of like,
it really is.
Oh, I'm doing this so I can be a star because the trial will be great. Like, it'll be the trial of the century, and I'll get off because I'll say there's no movies made me do it. Which we should mention, a big, not actually a big thing at all, but like a minor mention in this movie is that her life story has been turned into a movie called Stab, obviously.
Which I did enjoy all that, actually.
I liked it, but you introduce it and don't use it. Like, it's in the opening scene,
yeah.
It's talked about in reference, but, like, that doesn't become an actual, like, interesting part of the plot. Then they try to do it in the third movie, and by then it doesn't work, but...
It seems like they didn't want it as a plot point so much in the second film as just a few jokes to throw in. Like, oh, yeah, we actually got Tori Spelling to play her.
But, like,
and
the whole...
And here we got Skeet Ulrich's hair. I mean...
And that was really good. And also Luke Wilson showing up as Skeet Ulrich's character in the movie was really funny.
Really good. Yeah, some great act. Oh, that was a scene directed by Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, I read that.
Which was, like, back in the day when he was still good. That was, Oh, he had a Kevin Williamson connection, too, that Elijah Wood movie that the title escapes me.
The Faculty.
Yes, yeah. So there's another connection.
Actually, I like that movie.
I haven't seen it in a while.
But all that stuff was good. You're right. But it's like...
Yeah, but no, there's no... It needs to be in there for a reason better than two or three jokes.
Well, there was an opportunity there where the whole first one was making this meta-commentary on horror movies. Now there's a horror movie in your horror movie. Like, take it to the next level.
Do something with it.
And
yeah.
You didn't really do it. And then the third movie, they just totally mishandled it, I thought. But anyway, the Mickey thing didn't make a lot of sense to me. Then they try to sort of pull the... rug out from under you again with Cotton's character coming showing up at the end, and maybe he's involved. And
I like Timothy the actor too, but he didn't have like the Matthew Lillard quality going at the end there. I think he's too over the top of his crazy.
He wasn't over top enough. You have to either go way over the top or not that much. And
he's kind of like middle of the road. I wasn't too threatened by him, I guess.
Indeed.
But no, Scream 2, despite its flaws, and this, I think this rating falls more in the shadow of Scream 3 as far as what I knew what was coming, I guess. So I gave Scream 2 a 6.
I also gave Scream 2 a 6. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good twist on the boyfriend thing from the first movie, and I thought using Billy's mom was cool, like I said, but the other parts of it it felt like it was a little bit too predictable. It was just sort of mimicking the first movie instead of actually expanding upon it. And Dewey and Gale are boring.
And before it's worth it, they got more good new actors for the second one.
That's true.
People I love. I think, you know, Jerry O'Connell has a lovability to him already, so it helped. Mm-hmm. Moving on now, Scream 3. Are we now a year or two later? Do we know where we're at?
Now we're in 2000, and Scream 2 was 97, so we're 3 years later.
Okay. So Scream 3, Ryan, what's changed now?
Since well,
still in college, what's Dewey up to?
After, tell me about Dewey. after the traumatic events of Scream 2, which end with Neve Campbell and Courtney Cox shooting all the bad guys and being real badasses. And,
well, that sounds a lot better than it really was when you said that.
Yeah, and Courtney, and Cotton, played by Liv Schreiber, ends up being a good guy too, so don't worry about that. He's really great in the second movie, actually. Liv Schreiber's always great, but he was really good in the second movie.
Yes. And Dewey's surviving yet again.
Yeah, that's like a running gag now, where he's...
Right, that he really gets... He looks like he's really, really dying this time, but no, he's fine.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, after all that, Sydney has decided to move away. She's moved to the mountains. She is living under presumably a fake name. She's working at a crisis counseling center, but over the phone, so she doesn't have to actually leave the house. She has a lot of locks on her door. She's very insular, very, you know, trying to protect herself from...
I kind of
want
to laugh while you're talking about this. I know this is an actual movie, but it sounds like someone's bad fan fiction.
It kind of plays a little like fan fiction at times.
Yeah. Especially when there's a ghost story involved. So what's going on with his mom, her mom in this one, Ryan? Because her mom has to be involved somehow in every film.
Yeah, that was really weak. So she keeps seeing like visions of her mom, or she's having like flashbacks to her mom. Basically, they're just trying to force you to remember her mom was a thing from the first movie. Where she sees like her mom and Ghostface together or something. I don't know, Logan. She's remembering her mom's death.
Also, the new twist of Ghostface is that he had, in a never-explained way, mimic anybody's voice.
Yes, he has a magical voice transcode. Like, so there's always been a voice thing where anyone can sound like Kevin What's-His-Face, who does the voice of Ghostface. So they have this little voice transmogrifier, so you don't know who the killer is when you hear him over the phone. So now the special new voice transmogrifier can also make you sound like David Arquette, which is one I would buy.
Yes.
Or any other
no
character from the
Scream
series. Yeah.
So you also sound just like women, too.
Yeah, there's really no explanation for it, except that there's like a little silver disc that has like a light-up thing on it. It's like, well, that's all we need to explain that. Now, it does take place in Hollywood, a lot of it, because...
the majority of it, I think. Yeah.
The majority, yeah. The David Arquette character, Dewey, is serving as a consultant for Stab 3. They're making the third Stab film, and there's a lot of references to the first Scream movie. Gail Weathers shows up with... a cop played by Patrick Dempsey to talk to him about the fact that there have been more murders. The first couple minutes of the movie actually is probably the best part of it, where Liv Schreiber's character is murdered. Cotton.
I agree. That was, I think the Scream films, once again, to be discussed the fourth one, have this thing about after the Drew Barrymore opening, they have to top the opening every single time.
Right.
And this is the closest they've gotten so far. I can't, off the top of my head now, I barely remember the opening of the second. I remember it took place in theater, but I remember it being kind of stupid.
Omar Epps is killed, and then Jada Pinkett Smith is killed.
Yeah, when he's trying to listen through the door in the bathroom, which is kind of stupid.
Right.
Yeah, no. The third one has a great opening of Liv Schreiber, yes.
It does, and I hope that Scream 4, they top it by having, like, Sir Laurence Olivier's back from the dead to be killed at the beginning of Scream 4. Like, they just keep going up and up.
Ghostface is FDR. I don't know
that.
What to expect. Anyway, so, okay, all this is going on. Now, there's this... Most of it takes place around Hollywood and on the set of Stab 3. Mm-hmm. This seems like it should be an incidental setting, but it's not, because all this relates to her mom in some weird way.
Yeah. This is where Scream 3 goes into big-ass retconning.
Yes.
And they start changing all the patterns. Now, they try to get around it by Jamie Kennedy... showing up again as a videotape saying, if I didn't survive Scream 2, here's what I wanted to say about Scream 3.
Yeah, right. And I don't know if you read, the original script actually had him alive still.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, I believe that more. The way it is, it's great. His sister like opens a random door as we're walking by. And she's like, oh, here, he left this tape. Oh, first of all, they're like, who are you? And Sydney's like, oh, that's his sister. Don't you remember her? Like, we're supposed to remember her too or something.
Right, right.
But anyway, so they go and they watch. I'm happy Kennedy showed up in it because I like that character a whole lot.
Right.
And who knows, maybe they'll find some way. He's like, listen, in case they make a Stab 4, here's what you need to know. I don't know what they'll do in the fourth one about that.
I got to tell you, we're not in a predicting section yet, but my perfect way to do it would be if in Scream 4 they really did have a video where he's like, and just in case 4, and they just fast forward the tape, and it's like, now, in case there's 8 movies. And it's like, he's got like a bunch of them. That
I would hope the Scream series might actually do something like that, but you never know. Anyway, yeah. So that's kind of lame. There's a whole bunch of lame stuff going on here. The setting, first of all, I thought it was like, okay, is this just the reason to work in a Roger Corman cameo?
Yeah, he's there.
Which is kind of weird. Because it's not a Joe Dante movie, I guess that's why it's kind of weird.
Lance Henriksen is there playing the director, or the producer of the movie.
Giving it his all, which he shows up in a lot of these type of genre films to do his best he can, and yet he's still better than the movie most of the time. But the weakest thing here, Ryan, is the killer at the end.
Before we get to that, though, real quick.
Oh, go ahead. Are there weak things? Is that what you have to
There are definitely other weak things.
Don't say Patrick Warburton, because I like that.
No, Patrick Warburton is great in this movie. But this is where it starts feeling like, by the time we get to Scream 3, Scream has full-on become the kind of movie it's making fun of.
It really has, yes.
Where we have a bunch of characters introduced at the beginning, the cast of Stab 3, and it's so obvious they're just cannon fodder. Like, at first I was hoping that they would only show up briefly and then leave, but then we have, like, a 10-minute scene of Jenny McCarthy's death, and I'm like, I don't care about Jenny McCarthy's character. Like, this is ludicrous. It's actually, you know, we're just killing them off one by one, just like any other horror movie, and we've stopped focusing on any kind of semblance of interesting story or twists or motivation. We're not even concerned with, like, who the killer possibly is, because we've known from the last couple movies that you're not going to be able to figure it out because it's going to be some random thing you couldn't have guessed. And then all along the way, they're completely retconning the story of Scream 1 by suggesting there might be somebody else involved in her mother's murder. Her mother actually was an actress. We never knew that. I'm like, what? I don't really buy it.
You're making this up now. They try to turn one of these Stab characters into a character in Scream 3, which is Parker Posey's character.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want tagging along at any point in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really just there, like, because we hope she's going to die in every scene.
Yeah. And she doesn't.
But no, it doesn't. It's really just, I guess, so Gail Weathers wouldn't be walking around by herself most of the movie. But then also, who's his face? What's his butt? The guy from...
Who's face butt?
Who's face butt? The Grey's Anatomy guy, Patrick Dempsey.
Patrick Dempsey.
Is there too as a possible suspect.
True.
And he's like our Jerry O'Connell in this film. He's the main suspect because it's so obvious they're setting him up to be one. Actually, no, he's not as obvious as Emily Mortimer, who, one, has no reason at all being in this movie.
Because
they pretty much get to, like, we recast you as Tori Spelling from Stab 1 and 2. I'm like, how much sense does this make?
Yeah.
Okay. But no, she, like, at one point they pretty much find her dressed in the Scream costume, the Ghostface costume. She's like, oh, but I was just stealing, it's not me, okay?
It's just taking a souvenir, you guys, anyway.
Yeah, right, it's pretty stupid. Anyway, can we get to the end now, Ryan?
Please.
Okay. This is actually, the ending to this one, Ryan, is so obscure that when the killer reveals himself, he actually says, I am so-and-so, the director. Like, he has to say his role in Scream 3 so we know who he was.
Right.
It's that obscure, and it's that stupid, too. Now, they did think a lot about the backstory. I'll give it that much, but by that point in the movie, I'm willing to believe anything.
They thought a little about it.
And it's... No, it's pretty stupid, okay? I won't completely write it off, though, because there is a lot there. Like, I feel like he kept talking. Like, he felt like he really had to explain this to her.
Uh-huh.
And for once, we have certain characters that... I mean, the characters seem to be in different spots here, too. It's not like Dewey hasn't been stabbed to death this time. And now he can't help out. They're all trying to do something for what it's worth in the finale here. And, of course, Sydney is really smart at this point, so she pulls a fast one on him. That's kind of cool. But I don't know. Overall, there's really not much going on in Scream 3 of interest. Incredibly weak, and the biggest problem, you already said, is that it's become the movie that Scream started off like making fun of.
Yeah, and also Sydney is barely in it.
At this point, she's almost not at all, and that's why I've Scream 4, I totally expect, especially with the casting of like half the cast of Heroes and stuff in it, I don't expect her to even be in the fourth one.
Well, see, I kind of think it's going to be a turnaround, because now that Neve Campbell's career is officially dead, maybe she's going to be full-on in it.
Yeah, I really hope so. But no, that's another problem, I think, with the third one. We have like enough at the beginning to make us think that, you know, it could be cool that Sydney's in this or whatnot, but I don't know.
Well, let's talk more about the ending, because it's revealed that Roman, who is the director
I forgot his name, yes.
Yeah, the director of Stab 3,
Stab 3,
who we think we see killed a couple
lame
before.
They're not allowed to do that anymore, okay?
She feels for his pulse, by the way. He never explains why he didn't have a pulse. But, so there's that. He ends up being the killer. First of all, this is the only Scream movie where there aren't two killers. But his explanation is that 2 years, you didn't realize it, and I don't know why Neve Campbell doesn't remember her mom disappearing for 2 years, but for 2 years, or maybe it wasn't 2 years, but a couple months anyway, her mom went to Hollywood to be an actress. No, it had to be more than that. She was in like 4 or 5 films.
Yeah.
Be an actress under an assumed name who Lance Henriksen remembers. Lance Henriksen tried to have sex with her, or maybe he did.
Maybe
it's a little bit
did,
unclear.
Yes.
I think he did.
He's a Roman Polanski of this film.
He is. To try to get her like better roles, he's like, well, come over here, babe. She was like not cool about that, so she ran back to her normal life. Well, while in Hollywood, being a, you know, this is also what made her a slut, apparently, which is important.
Yes, right. Oh, yeah, yeah. See, more backstory. Like, we needed backstory why she was a slut.
I'm like, I'm glad she's a slut. It's fine. But anyway, while in Hollywood, she had an illegitimate child, Roman. Roman later shows back up at her doorstep and is like, hey, I'm your son. She's like, you were that other girl's son. And now she's dead. I'm not that girl anymore. Slam that face on that door. Face.
Face.
And so he was like, oh, yeah, well, I. So the story...
Yeah, I'll tell two of the characters the first one to kill everybody.
Right, is that Roman, who is a budding director, directs these two high school kids to kill
yep.
Sydney from the first movie, and they don't work out. So it's or to kill, I'm sorry, to kill your mom, which they do, and then, yeah, it's really
they never
kind of
mentioned
thin.
This at all.
Yeah.
Like, when Skeet Ulrich is explaining it, he should have, I feel like he would have been like, oh, this one guy told me about this, you know what I mean? Like, if that guy really got the ball rolling, I think he would have thrown that out there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, after he's telling them their entire plan, he doesn't mention
exactly.
Roman. Of course, because it wasn't ever intended to be that way, which is funny because Kevin Williamson's always claiming that... Well, that's another funny thing, is that Kevin Williamson wrote a draft of Scream 3, but it was thrown out, and somebody else wrote Scream 3.
And I think this is the, you know, producer stepping in once again saying, oh, here's what you can and can't do of a Scream film. Like, they're so... It's so machine, I guess, when you think about it.
Yeah.
This is the way these films are. Because it seems like they shouldn't be. Like, these are... Scream... The first Scream, at least, seems so anti-establishment as far as what they were doing in horror movies and what they should be doing. I don't know. Anyway, Scream 3, what a disappointment.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, it still had some interesting moments, but it's ultimately a 5 for me.
And we are exactly agreement because I gave this film a 5 as well.
Wow, that's never happened with 3 movies in a row for us.
With 3 movies in a row, yeah. But see, I don't know. I kind of went into these... You know, I bet you were thinking the same. Like, I kind of knew we'd have the exact same opinion on these films.
Yeah.
Because you and I were kind of always in the middle of the road, and we never, like, extremely liked the Scream films, and we never ignored them either.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Scream 3 is never really boring enough or bad enough to be anything less than a 5, you know?
It's so like, it's long, though.
Yeah, it really is. It's still entirely watchable, though.
It's more than 2 hours long, I think.
Well.
Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know. I felt like the second one was pretty long. So there is the Scream trilogy in a nutshell. Now, here's the interesting thing, okay, Ryan?
Okay.
Jamie, first of all, there's a lot of talk about trilogies in the third film, okay?
Okay.
Second, they put in this video from Jamie Kennedy's character, and he flat out says, if you're dealing with all the issues that you're dealing with right now in Scream 3, then this isn't just another entry. What we have is the concluding part
mm-hmm.
of a trilogy.
Indeed.
Cut to 11 years later, Scream 4. Now, I'm glad to say that they didn't reboot it. I'm actually really surprised they didn't reboot it, honestly.
Yeah.
And that I'm glad they're calling it Scream 4 and not just Scream, even though it is a sequel, you know, that sort of thing. But this is kind of weird that there's all this talk in the third one about this and that they're doing it anyway.
Yeah, I hope they reference that. Like, that's what Scream 1 would have done. I hope they say something like, what would be really funny to me is if there's a running gag about how, well, if you've had your trilogy and you're still making movies, this must be a reboot. And they're like, but it isn't. Like, you know, and they're like there's some joke about how you should have all younger people and they're all in their 40s now. And it's like, that would be funny to me.
Exactly. I can easily see them ignoring all that, though, only because they don't have a way to work in Jamie Kennedy's character, you know?
Do we know he's not in this?
No, we don't know that.
Okay.
They've promised lots of great cameos. A few which have been ruined in the latest Entertainment Weekly issue, but there's people I don't care about, like that, the one lady from Gossip Girl, like, When in Rome in those films.
Okay.
Who's, like, people I could care less.
That's how you know you're old, when you don't remember the celebrities who are getting killed in the Scream movies.
That's really the case, yeah. Here's kind of some setup about Scream 4, right, Ryan?
Okay.
The recent Entertainment Weekly one newsstands right now has, first of all, this great story where they interview everyone conversation style about the making of the first Scream. Everyone has some great stories, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Including Matthew Lillard, had a great time on it. And who actually appeared in Scream 2 and 3, by the way.
Yeah, I heard about that. As, like, background characters?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Hopefully they'll work him in Scream 4, because, you know, he needs to work. Anyway, but Scream 4 was a long time in the making. Kevin Williamson, every script he came up with, they totally told him he couldn't do it. To tell you a little bit about what's to expect here, they said the opening of this one's going to be over 10 minutes long. It's going to have the highest body count. Overall, the film's going to have the highest body count of any of the Scream films.
Okay.
And for what's worth, Entertainment Weekly, who has seen the movie, gave it a B+, said it was the best opening of the series so far. And they kind of described it as a, I don't know how I feel about this, but a Final Destination type thing, where it's kind of like a
fake out.
Like, it piles up on itself as far as it's dying wear here.
I hope that means that like 11 different ghost faces enter the room.
It's at the end of Three Amigos, yes. There's a little bit of ghost face in all of us.
I am a ghost face.
All that aside, okay, but that's not what Kevin Williamson wanted. Kevin Williamson wanted to open the film. It doesn't say of her dying. He said he wanted to open the film with Sydney getting attacked, and they flat out told him they couldn't do that.
Why?
So that line, I know, isn't that weird? Like, I don't. There's no explanation why, but this is the Weinsteins again. And there's anyway, they said through most of the shoot, him and Harvey. Is he the only? Mm-hmm. He's the main guy now. And Harvey Weinstein were not on talking terms at all. They would not talk to each other. And now they say that they're on good terms again, but they still haven't talked since the actual filming of the film, of the movie. So I should tell you, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes craziness going on with what being told what he couldn't do in this fourth film.
That always frustrates me, because it's like, you bought the first movie, you trusted him that far.
Exactly, and now you're on the fourth, you know, this is the third sequel. You should just, you know, let him do whatever he wants to at this point, within reason, obviously. And granted, you're the one putting up the money, but I think Scream fans are willing to go for anything in a fourth film. So that being said, I doubt Sydney's going to die. If they won't even let her get attacked in the first 10 minutes, unless they're saving it for something at the end. You probably heard about all the reshoots this film went through as well. A lot of things tested really poorly, so they had to go back and get done again. And I hope that's not stuff like, oh, you know, we decided to kill Dewey, but that tested poorly, so now he has to live, and things like that, because that kind of pissed me off.
Right.
You're pulling the fourth film, so let's just, anything goes, okay? If you want to kill Gail Dewey, or even Sydney, that's fine with me, okay?
Yeah, be fine with me.
Like, I don't want this, like, Halloween series where Jamie Lee Curtis sticks around, like, Halloween, was it Resurrection? Where she's like, now I'm crazy, I'm dying.
I'm a crazy old, I'm jumping out a window! Yeah.
Zip, zip, roo.
Although, I totally recognized the mansion in Scream 3 as the school in Halloween H2O, and it totally was, so give me some credit on that.
I didn't pick up on that at all. Okay, now, what do we know? It's been 11 years, of course.
Yeah.
Sydney goes back to Woodboro, I think was the name of the town. Where she has released a book, I think it is. And she's there on a book signing tour with her publicist, who's played by Alison Brie of Mad Men and Community fame.
It's weird that she would write a book when she seems to never want publicity on this stuff.
It's exactly right. But she's learned that it's been so long now, I guess nothing's happened, that she's okay with all this.
Okay, so she decides to tempt fate.
As we learned from the third one, when she care less about closing the door. That was what we're supposed to
do. Yeah, that was the big moment.
She's obviously born in a barn, by the way.
Right.
And so she's there. Of course, she meets up with the now-married Dewey and Gail, which they said was awkward filming because even though they're having marriage issues within the movie itself, they were having marriage issues on the set. And the crew kind of talks about it in a funny way. They're like, no one knew anything was going on except that David went to a different place when filming was over. And there's all. Meanwhile, we cut to the high school where we have a new cast of Hayden, whatever her name is. I have nothing for or against her, I guess.
Pentiera.
Okay, she doesn't seem like she belongs in a Scream film, though, honestly. As a closet movie nerd, I don't know how I feel about that. We also have a Culkin, Roy Culkin, I believe, the one from Signs.
Okay.
Runs the film club at their high school. You can tell because he has long hair and wears flannel a lot.
Okay.
And a few other guys. I'm sure there's a new Matthew Lillard and a few, you know, whoever is hip and young.
I hope Matthew Lillard plays the new Matthew Lillard.
They are getting together for, I believe, now hold on, don't quote me on this, okay? I wish in my head it was a remake of Stab, because that would be kind of cooler, I think. But I think they're getting together for a Scream or Stab 4 is coming out, so they're going to do a whole Stab retrospective at the school, right?
Uh-huh.
They're going to have the big drunk party, and that's where, you know, they start getting picked off and everything, i.e. the first film, where they're having the Halloween party kind of at the end there.
Yeah.
And so then everything starts going on from there.
So can I just say, first of all, this is already sounding like a bad move, because you're introducing a bunch of new characters just to kill them. It's like, I don't care.
I don't any of these new people.
About any of the new people, yeah.
I don't want Steam 3. I don't want Scream 3 again, though, honestly. Yeah. Like, I don't stuck with the same old characters either. Like, I feel that you could do this in a different way. I don't want a whole new set of teens, I think is the biggest problem here.
Right, exactly.
The other thing, okay, a few things about this. The trailer, I don't know if you've seen or not, which I would tell you not to see because it's a typical trailer. It's like they're giving away too much.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, good. Stay away from it. I only saw it one time. I've decided not to watch it again. However, something I did like in the trailer, and you know, in 11 years, Ryan, a lot's changed with horror movies, okay? For example, every one that comes out now is a remake, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to think that that wasn't really so much the case 11 years ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually acknowledged in the trailer when Ghostface is on the phone with Hayden. He says, name the remake that, and then she instantly reels off all these remakes. It's a great little bit, I think.
Oh, actually, I have seen that. Yeah, that was pretty good.
So it'll be interesting to see like the new rules, I guess. But at the same time, I kind of don't want to see that. don't get me wrong. I'll see a Scream 4, but I have very low expectations at this point. I think enough times passed where they could have come up with something incredibly awesome, but I really think we're just going to get a generic slasher film.
If they find a way to make fun of remakes and reboots within a movie that does actually have the original cast, that would be a very interesting accomplishment, and I would give them a lot of credit for it.
So
I'll say that, but I don't necessarily have high hopes that they will.
Things have changed now. We go back to the day when Skeet Ulrich was suspicious because he had a cell phone, remember?
Right.
Now everyone has a cell phone, so do we think that Ghostface will be posting threats on his Twitter page?
I think that in my version of it, yeah, that's what'll happen. In my version, he tweets to Sydney.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do we think stuff like that? They're going to have to acknowledge technology. Do you think there's going to be texts from Ghostface? Because that's in no way scary.
Not from Ghostface, but I think that stuff could play in. I think what would be a funny way to do it is if there was a stab application everyone had in their phone that made you sound like Ghostface.
That's kind of neat, yeah.
So everybody could just use it. I think that would be pretty clever.
They really have, well, you know, they kind of, I guess, kind of did that, the opening of the second one, but they haven't really, yeah, mm-hmm. They haven't done anything where everyone can talk like Ghostface yet.
Because, I mean, obviously that's totally doable now.
Right, right. I don't know. I want one of these three people to die at this point, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, oh, yeah, also Williamson originally wanted Gail to be pregnant or have a baby, but he was told he couldn't do that because then they'd have to deal with the baby around all these crime scenes and everything. So instead they're having marital issues.
Would have made it hard to write if she had a baby. Yeah. I mean, I agree with that.
So instead they're having marital issues. I wouldn't be surprised if they both survived the end of this movie. She's like, I'm pregnant or something like that.
Right. Did they officially get divorced?
No, they're just... Actually, I was having an argument with someone about this, and I did look it up, and they're just separated right now.
Okay.
Which is weird, because depending on which tabloid you believe, everyone's to blame for it.
The end of Scream 3 was funny in that light when I was watching it, where they're like, I know this isn't going to work. We should try anyway. I'm like, you're right, it won't.
Yeah, what's even funnier is if you watch the, actually, even sadder, if you watch the outtakes of the Scream 3, Scream 2 and 3 DVDs have really funny outtakes, oddly enough. Mm. But Dave Arquette's really funny in those. But also, like, there's random scenes where at the end of the take, he'll just, you know, kiss her out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
There's this great bit, too, where it's his birthday, and so they sing happy birthday to him. And typical Dave Arquette is the end, he's like, it'd be better if my wife was here today. And of course, like, I'm like, okay, Dave Arquette, grow up, because she's going to break up with you. So I called the past, and I was like, it's all over, David Arquette.
Dear David Arquette, I'm writing from the past to the future.
Wait, hold on a second.
Don't make eight-legged freaks. No.
That's one of his highlights. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I guess
about?
You're right.
No, I don't know. So I think there's so much, I don't know, there's more here to acknowledge than you would think for a Scream 4. I know what I don't want to see, and I think that's what they're mainly going to do with this movie. I don't know. Scream 4, right?
I'm depressed about it.
How do you feel about Scream 4?
Well, I think that...
Do you think there's a possibility at all that one of the killers could be Gail, Dewey, or Sydney?
No, I don't
think
so.
Ah, shucks.
But I think that Scream 3 was a disappointment, I think for pretty much everybody. And I think that that leaves them open to do anything with this one and potentially succeed.
Well, you know they're going to tie into her mom somehow.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I kind of hope they will, but there's nothing more to say about that.
I know, but I mean, they made it like all the action from the first three, each one had to do it for mom.
The second one, did the second one did in a loose way because it was more about Billy. But like, yes, I agree. It's like there's nothing more to say about her mom. But if they got away from her mom, then it would be sort of the departure from the series where it was always very tied closely to her. Or maybe, do you think they're going to do the Jamie Lee Curtis thing where they're like, this is the exit, they're introducing Hayden as the new...
That's my other thing about that. I totes think that's where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
I think for sure, like, otherwise they wouldn't have cast her. However, Emma Roberts, everyone's forgetting she's in this, and she's actually playing Sydney's niece. And I think they're playing up Hayden more because she's more of a celebrity, but I think this movie's actually we're going to have Emma Roberts as the survivor girl.
Okay, I can see that.
Either way, who knows, maybe one of them will be the killer.
If Nev ends up being the killer, that'll be pretty cool.
But in this Entertainment Weekly article, Williams is talking up a 5 and 6 he's already written an outline for. I really do not want an open-ended ending.
Yeah.
Please do not do something big to be continued type thing. You know what I would totally approve of, but they got a lot of explaining to do. If someone like Mente Killer or Skeet Ulrich comes back for a cameo as the killer.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I was thinking
they
that.
They somehow survived, yeah. Or someone, maybe not Roman, but you know, yeah. Some other character from, who was, actually, you know what? They could totally do that in Mente Killer. I just realized that. Because Roman, she shot in the head. They made sure she was shooting the head. Because, you know, they did the bit where they had to get up again, right?
Uh-huh.
Same thing with Laurie Metcalf, same thing with Skeet Ulrich. Did not happen with Matthew Lillard.
That's true. Did they just let him bleed out? What happened to
him? Yeah, we never saw any resolution to that. We never, I guess, yeah, suppose he died whenever he was on the phone or, you know, he just bled out.
Did he get shot?
No, he was stabbed several times.
But then I think she came up behind Sydney at some point. I think he might have gotten shot at some point.
But either way, they didn't do the whole thing of him getting up again
right.
Like they did all the other characters.
Agreed.
So that's a possibility. You know, I would approve of that just on the principle of, you know, I like Matthew Lillard.
The Matthew Lillard principle.
The Matthew Lillard, yes.
We could verify this right now, but I don't want to.
No, I don't want to either. And then, honestly, that's not something I thought about until now, because, you know, just talking about the story from the past three, mm-hmm. Think about it. I would be totally awesome with that, though. And I would like to, who knows, if he somehow got away at the end, I would watch Scream 5, knowing he was. Maybe that'd be better if there was a Scream film where we knew who Ghostface was, or who we thought it was.
Yeah, but that takes away the mystery. You're really getting far away from the premises of Scream.
Yeah, I think any Scream sequels are getting away from the premises of Scream.
I guess so.
That's why I pretty much just stopped there, but I don't know. I've now come full circle, Ryan, and I'm now excited about Scream 4 again.
Well, I actually kind of am too. In fact, I might go see it right now.
Oh, it's a Saturday night. I'm not going to a Scream film. It's like seeing a Paranormal Activity on Saturday night. It's going to be insane in the theater.
Yeah, yes, you're right.
But who knows? That might be the best crowd to see a Scream film with.
They might be screaming.
They might be
screaming. I might be murdered. I might be like the beginning of Scream 2 where I go with Jada Pinkett Smith. I'm like, let's go, baby.
And she's like, oh, I only like Sandra Bullock movies.
What a bitch, by the way. Dump your girlfriend. Like, look,
yeah, really.
I want to see one movie. Can you come
with
me?
No, just come.
It's free. Christ.
And they're giving us free random crap just walking into the theater. This
yeah.
is pretty cool.
Don't talk during the movie, Jada. All right.
Well, I don't count off for that because that was the craziest theater in the world, Ryan.
It was.
They were like pretty much swinging from the rafters in that film.
That's true.
But anyway, okay. So Scream 4, we'll let you know Wednesday.
Give
we
10.
Will not give anything away. Hopefully, maybe we'll. If it's huge, we'll spoiler duck it at the end.
Yeah.
Only because I assume Scream 4 itself is going to be huge, and a lot of, I think, the people listening to this show are about our age, so they're the kind of the Scream generation, so they might be rushing out to see Scream 4.
That's true. Of the 28 people who listen to this show, most of them are our age, you're right.
27 of them.
Yeah.
It's that old guy, the perv.
I like movies, too. You want to take off our pants together? I'm like, no, Logan, and stop using that voice. Jeez.
Ryan, if you ask you to play Touch His Wiener, it's not as fun as it sounds, okay?
The aftermath.
In fact, there's really not much of a game to it. I keep winning. Up.
Technically, it's not a. What was the up? Up. I did it.
Yeah, right when you were
talking. Oh, crap. Up. Up. Ooh.
I'm going back for more.
I'm going back.
Put a stop to this, would you?
Well, you'll go back for more when you listen to us on iTunes, Logan.
I see what you're doing. Yes.
Yes.
Much like Ghostface, we have a Twitter account too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Ghostface has a fan page on Facebook, much like ourselves.
Probably does, and he would probably ask you to visit ghostface.com, which may be a real website, but even if it isn't, visit criticalend.com, where you'll see blog posts from us every weekday.
I imagine he'd have a pretty fun blog.
He would.
But not as cool as ours, which is, every weekday.
That's kind of a clever idea for a movie. I'm not going to tell you any more about it. I'll tell you after we stop recording.
Yeah, because they'll steal it.
Yeah.
We nothing but a bunch of thieves and one old guy listening to the show, right?
I'm not wearing pants still, and I'm writing a movie about you in my pants tonight.
Okay, just because you asked, I'll touch the wiener again, okay?
I didn't ask for it. Stop! Oh! That's how you get back at those guys. You molest them.
Yes, it works learn. Best that way. That's how you get fit. By the way, if Ghostface ever comes after you, just start molesting him.
You're like, I'll be like this. Little, how's your father? He's like, no.
That reminded me. I was supposed to bring this up. This is, I think Shriek or Scream, if you know what I did last Halloween or Friday 13th, whichever it was.
That's actually a pretty good movie.
Which, was the best parody of these new slasher films. Like, it was, you know, everyone thinks of scary movies, but the scary movies really weren't good.
No.
But these were. That one was. Anyway, I think it pointed out the fact that Ghostface, is, no matter who he is, he's still the most clumsy person ever.
Yes.
There's great scenes where he just falls through windows, he falls down steps, and a lot of it is just himself running after someone.
Yeah.
Like, that person turns, and he keeps going straight and runs into the wall. My absolute favorite Ghostface moment, though, is in Scream 3. Out of nowhere, Dave Arquette is just talking to the two of them, right?
Right.
I think what we need to do is Ghostface just punches him.
Right.
Like, how did you not see that coming?
That's great. Yeah, nobody has any peripheral vision.
Right.
No, that was great because they're like, are you sure we're safe? He's like, yes, we're safe. And he gets punched by Ghostface. The best thing is that all versions of Ghostface use a gun, but only at the very last scene. Like, well, if he used a gun ahead of time, he would be able to
work out so much better.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'd forget it. I'm sorry. I'm glad I remembered how clumsy Ghostface was. That was when I saw the scene, I assumed it was an accident. Like, he just kind of he was listening behind a curtain and fell into the scene, so he turned it into a punch.
You're right, he tried to play it off.
But he really does kind of fall down. I don't think he punched him and ran off or anything. Look at the fucking punch so much.
He literally jumps on him, yeah.
Yeah, really, it's kind of funny.
Oh.
Okay, so we'll see how clumsy he is. Also, we've yet to have a female Ghostface. So that's kind of overdue in the fourth one, too.
I guess so. I guess Laurie Metcalf wasn't really ever Ghostface.
What they might do
really
is do the... No, no, because she couldn't do any of the heavy lifting.
No.
What we actually do in this one is have, you know, Hayden or Emma, one of those, someone else, who, you know, the Culkin or whatever, be the Ghostface. But then the person behind the scenes, and once again, I don't really want the Two Killer again, might be the Matthew Lord.
I wouldn't mind Two Killers.
Maybe he sees too weak after the first film. He's been in hiding. Maybe he'll have, like, a Unabomber-type beard going on.
Yeah, and he's on oxygen or something.
Yeah. Like, they wheel him in at the end. I can't see Lord acting through that, though, because he's very... He has a lot of expressions, and he moves a lot.
So manic. He's like, oh, I'm about to die! I'm on oxygen! Oh, boy! I tell you what!
What is this Scooby-Doo for?
He just starts, like, wheeling the wheelchair around really fast. No. What's he been wheeling?
I hope the first scene Ghostface is in a wheelchair, so it's not obvious at all.
Right, it's just like, but he's like, got the cloak over the wheel, so it's like low key. He's like, oh, I'm just gonna.
But you'd feel bad for him, so you'd stop and let him get closer to you before you ran off again.
Right.
He's in a wheelchair, mind you, so. But you get the best parking places that way for his murders.
I tell ya. Well, Logan.
Coming up in 2 days, so come back to Critical Inn or iTunes on Wednesday and hear the show then.
That's right. Wait, Wednesday? Oh, yeah, that's right. This is coming up Monday, right?
Today is, when you're listening to this, it came out Monday.
Right, yes. So you're going to have, this is a special episode, and you'll have your normal episode Wednesday, so you will get both Screams in a week.
By this point, you've already seen Scream 4 over the past weekend, mm-hmm. So you're listening to this, and you're like, well, I'm glad I know what they thought about the first series. Can't wait to hear what they say about the fourth one. But they're either completely right, and it blows my mind, or they're so wrong, and I saw Hop by accident.
What? We've said a lot of vague things. Make one solid prediction about Scream 4, Logan. Go.
That is, really good. Can I have a second to think? Do you
yes.
already have
No.
Oh, okay. Well, hold on. Let's think at the same time so there's nothing but silence, and we'll cut it out later.
Okay.
Well, I'm done thinking, Ryan. That was 2 hours.
Oh, I slept too long. Oh, God.
They blew it up.
They blew it up. Soylent Green is Nev Campbell.
I totally believe by this point Rise of the Apes is out, so let's go check that out instead.
All right.
Soylent Green is Nev Campbell. It's not that bad. Cheese on top, some sprinkles.
A little gamey.
One solid prediction. I want to make this a go. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you just toss that at me. Okay, I'm gonna make. Can I make two predictions?
Yes.
One which I'll kind of see. I don't feel very confident in either one of these, but these are two things that I kind of hope will happen. Okay. The one that I kind of had going into this show was that one of the three of them is either gonna die or be the killer.
Okay.
That being Sydney, Dewey, or Gale. Mm-hmm. And then my new one, which is not as solid as that first prediction, this is more of a prediction which I hope will come true, is that Matthew Lillard will be involved somehow.
I was thinking the same thing, actually. My Matthew Lillard was my hope, but I think that's a far-fetched hope.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's, like I said, I think I just kind of talked myself into it after we kind of discovered that there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so solid prediction from your end? It can be something, if you want to say, like, oh, Jamie Kennedy will appear somewhere, that's fine with me, too. It doesn't have to be something about the ending. Like, if you think Ghostface is going to actually text them something or other here,
here's my prediction. You ready? My prediction is it'll go one of two different ways. Either there will be only one killer, and it will be someone significant that we've met before this movie, mm-hmm. or that will be tied into the backstory some way. Like, maybe it's Sydney's grandfather. Like, it wouldn't be like someone brand new, okay?
So yours are kind of broad here, okay. Oh, her dad's still around and kicking.
Her dad is still around. What I'm saying is it'll be someone like super significant to her personally, not somebody we like meet in this movie as like a new character, like, you know what I mean? Or opposite direction, there will be more than two ghost faces, and it'll be like several ghost faces. So it's either going to go one super significant, which is like the reboot kind of route, or it will go up the ante, there's multiple ghost faces.
I think they're definitely trying to double this up as a reboot, especially if they want to work in a 5 and 6. So whatever they do will try to be lasting, I think.
Okay.
But I don't know. See, after talking about this much, I'm now excited about Scream 4.
Wait, I have another prediction.
Okay.
Ghost.
Nothing of Hop. We're not seeing Hop, okay?
Oh, wait, what was his name? Oh, shit. This joke is the best. I don't want to ruin it with my crazy, not
You gotta
remembering
research my
it.
joke first. This is the moment of silence we'll cut out.
I don't remember his name. The last surviving killer in Saw, that'll be Ghostface. No, not Cary
Dr.
Elwes.
Gordon?
No, not
No,
Cary
no,
Elwes.
no. Oh, Costas, I remember his
Yes.
name. Oh man, we sat through like nine of these
I
movies.
know.
Oh, it'll come to me as soon as this show's over. Well, as soon as it does, I'll let you do the joke again. Oh, his
That's
name
killing me.
was the Hoffman. There it is.
Hoffman, yes.
Do your joke again.
Logan, I have a funny joke. Did you know
I'm
that,
laughing already. Go ahead.
according to my sources, Ghostface will actually be Hoffman from the Saw movies?
Saw movies.
You get it?
Belly, I'm shaking as I laugh.
Oh,
Ha
man.
ha ha!
That one was
Touch
weird.
the old guy's wiener.
Well,
I
touch the old
hope
guy's wiener, Logan. That's our common.
it is Hoffman, and he's actually going after Dr. Gordon the whole film,
He doesn't
but he's killing
realize.
other people along the way by mistake.
Sydney's actually related to Dr. Gordon. That would be a twist.
Yes. What a twist! She's like, Robin Van Tights is my dad. No, he's my real mom. That's what the new
That's my real mom. Carrie
Carrie
was just
Elwes is like,
like,
Yoo-hoo!
I did other movies, maybe. You guys are right.
Oh, man.
Well, touch the old man's wiener, Logan.
Good night, folks. A little touch of the wiener before bed.
Or after.
After bed. Okay.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.